Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's March 2021, and you're listening to episode 225, which is a conversation about the revenge film genre, complete with some spoilers for some of these films. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Philip Tallon, who is the author of The Poetics of Evil and The Absolute Basics of the Christian Faith. He is currently the interim dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. Phil has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Wild Justice, Why Do We Love Revenge Movies? And you can read his article when you subscribe to our magazine at our website, equip.org. Our online exclusive highlighted articles that we talk about in these podcasts is one of the special benefits we offer to our subscribers. Phil, it's good to have you on.
Oh, very glad to be back.
Well, as I mentioned, we're going to have a conversation about the revenge film genre, and this is going to be really fascinating because, you know, you might have noticed in the last decade or so, just in terms of Hollywood films, you know, they've been pretty dominated by Marvel movies, and we've talked about some of those on this podcast of late. But there is quite a robust, like, subgenre of action movies that is centered on revenge. Of course, you know, we can go all the way back to, you know, some of those earlier 80s types of movies, you know, with Die Hard and Rambo and those kinds of things. But why do you think that filmgoers are interested in this revenge subgenre? And just in general, what are Christians to even make of such a genre of film?
Yeah, well, it is interesting that we have this, you know, kind of smaller subgenre running alongside the Marvel movies. And the Marvel movies, of course, are brightly lit and, you know, aim to have more just heroic themes, where the, you know, these typically R-rated, darker revenge action movies have, you know, continued to be, you know, pretty steadily bankable and spawn sequels. So there's a kind of an old fashionedness almost to the way that these movies have rolled out. So I'm thinking particularly of series like Taken or the John Wick series, especially, or things like the Equalizer series, which is a remake of TV show and novels, but there's a new version of this. I think there's a TV show coming out as well. And people, they're remaking, you know, Death Wish, for instance, the old Death Wish movies. They're making that with Bruce Willis. And so, you know, there's clearly an audience for this. And it's clearly influenced the culture. I mean, you see, you know, Liam Neeson memes as he's talking into the phone, threatening the bad guys who have, you know, harmed his daughter. And I now hear, you know, people that, you know, repeat these lines and talk about having a special set of skills that they can use to come for people who wrong them. And so there's a, you know, kind of a whole, you know, subgenre. Why is this so attractive? I mean, I think partly it's because it connects to a deep desire that we have within us for justice, right? We like seeing justice brought about. It's a basic moral intuition that, you know, that we have that that wrongs should be punished. And so it's incredibly satisfying to see that played out very clearly and immediately on screen, instead of having to deal with our messy legal system, which takes time, or even in a theological sense with the delayed eschatological justice of Christ's return in the last judgment, right? So it scratches that itch for seeing justice played out. So I think it makes sense why we identify with it. I think it's also the case that I think we live in an age where there's a really strong and prominent sense of widespread injustices and in kind of increasing call for measures that, you know, enact justice in sort of new and different ways. Obviously, we, you know, we talk a lot not just about sort of legal justice, but social justice to rectify historic inequities. And so I think justice is kind of at the top of everybody's mind. And these movies don't particularly deal with more complicated matters. In fact, I think part of the reason they're attractive is that they're pretty uncomplicated, Liam Neeson has very identifiable moral impulses. It's understandable to try and kill a bunch of bad guys to get to rescue your daughter, especially when nobody else has the ability to do so. It's not that morally complicated to see John Wick tearing through clearly evil Russian mobsters who are well armed. And so these films give us a simple, satisfying, and immediate hit of imminent justice in the here and now.
Right. You're talking about, you know, these two franchises, which both of them, Taken and John Wick, have, you know, a trilogy of films so far. Although, without any spoilers, major spoilers, I mean, you know, John Wick ended on this cliffhanger, which you feel like, okay, he's going to come back for chapter four or something like that. It seems that in Hollywood, there's always been that idea of justice. I mean, I was thinking even back to the, you know, 50s and 60s, where there's the proliferation of Westerns, this idea of, you know, frontier justice or something. Or I was even thinking of Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood in the early 90s. Or I know you've talked to us about Tarantino films where this idea of, I don't know if we specifically focused on Inglourious Basterds when we spoke 5 years ago about it, but that was in the early aughts. And just this idea of, okay, let's turn the typical story where we were feeling very, you know, overwhelmed by all the atrocities of World War II. And what if we did this kind of revenge film where there's justice done to, you know, evil Nazis kind of thing. So do you think any of these series, particularly Taken and John Wick, are commendable, or any of these types of films, or is it really just exploitation, or just like, you know, violence? They're so overly violent. When I think of like Inglourious Basterds and even, you know, Taken and John Wick, there's so much, you know, gun violence in there. You know, is it just kind of, you know, as slash them up as much as we can, as, you know, gruesome as we can, just for the sake of that?
Yeah, no, it's, well, there's other two things in there. One is, you know, are these commendable, and is there, maybe do they cross the line, and what do we make of the, just the unrelenting violence? I will say that having, in order to prepare for this, I went through and watched a lot of these movies, more than I talk about in the piece. And so, you know, it is wearying after a while just to witness so much violence, so many bearers of the image of God dispatched with gunshots to the head repeatedly. You know, it kind of wears on the soul. I think that what the Taken movies and the John Wick films and, say, Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds or Django Unchained, for instance, or even this recent Once Upon a Time in Hollywood have in common, is that they do offer us a kind of fantasy, which is to say they offer us a fantasy where there's a certain measure of moral clarity. We're dealing with clearly evil people who are powerful, and so their evils can't be rectified through normal means, right? Through the kind of coercion of the culture around them or through the legal system. And so force must be brought in these cases. And so they offer a fantasy where force needs to be brought. It must be brought in order to bring about, you know, sort of justice in the here and now. And we're dealing with kind of clearly evil people, because the movie is taking place within this sort of snow globe where we see the badness of these wicked people. In the real world, of course, things are always much more complicated, right? Things are more messy. It's hard to carry out sort of force without hurting people who are in fact innocent, or, you know, to work within a situation where we're not already kind of complicit or, you know, bound up within with injustice ourselves. And so there's a sense in which they do offer kind of a bracketed justice laboratory where we can see, okay, Adolf Hitler. If any person, military figure, political figure, sort of deserves to have martial force brought against him to end his life, clearly this is someone who deserves this. And Inglourious Basterds gives us that fantasy, the fantasy of people, Jews, American soldiers who are Jewish, you know, enacting justice against this wicked person. And so I don't think that it's wrong for us to view art that presents a kind of an unreal but yet desirable fantasy. I do think that it can, if we sort of uncritically engage in this, you know, affect our own internal fantasy lives. And so just talking to a colleague before editing down this article, and I talked about the movie Taken, and we both, you know, shared how, you know, we kind of think about that scenario. We both family men, we have wives, we have children, and we kind of think about, oh man, you know, what if somebody hurt our kids and we had to, you know, sort of take vengeance on them. And it's not just a nightmare. It's kind of a, something we're almost thinking, oh man, that would be sort of, that'd be kind of cool. It'd be sad, but man, like, wouldn't that be incredible? There's some way in which we've been primed kind of emotionally and in our imaginations to think of in these ways. And I do think there is a sense in which that is an un-Christian way to think. Jesus rewires in so many ways our approach to wrongs that are done against us, right? And fundamentally upsets the sort of economy of justice that Christians have a different mode of operation than I think these movies would lead us to think in. And so I think there's some measure of caution there. The same thing goes, of course, for romantic comedies, which set up unrealistic expectations for what love will be like, or, you know, any number of other, you know, success stories, that kind of thing. I mean, there are all sorts of ways that Hollywood movies, if we allow them to present themselves as the truth to us, then they can mislead our affections.
Do you think there's some kind of exploitation element in them, though, with stereotypes like you were mentioning earlier, like, you know, bad Russians? So suddenly it seems to me in these films, particularly both Taken and John Wick, you know, Russian mobsters are portrayed as being evil and, you know, just those kinds of things that, oh, the really evil people at the top, they're all from Middle Eastern countries, you know, that kind of thing. And John Wick, is there some kind of exploitation of like stereotypes and tropes that these movies are falling on that can be bad for, you know, just our perception, as you said, of people made in the image of God?
Yeah, I think I'm sure you could spend some time, you know, examining the particular ways that bad guys, for instance, in John Wick are coded. You know, you have in the first movie, especially Russian mobsters. And then as the films progress, you know, we get a real, you know, melting pot of different ethnicities and different sorts of gangs. You know, you have the sort of Chinese gang and they do martial arts, and you have these Romani or Gypsy, you know, people. They have their own kind of particular way of operating. I don't know that the way that the film presents, you know, different kind of ethnic groups, is that in itself is necessarily exploitative. Certainly the John Wick movies exist in this bizarre universe where everyone is either basically just a faceless bystander, typically protected from harm, or a criminal engaged in some, you know, some nefarious activities. It's a really abstracted and kind of fantastic world. That's part of the charm of it. It has its own sort of mythology where basically just the gangs, you know, control large swaths of common life, and you get to see them kind of battling out against each other. I do think it is really exploitative to, you know, present these scenarios in order to engage in a sort of prolonged fantasy of violence. Now, I don't think something being exploitative necessarily means it's prohibited. I do think that it diminishes how commendable a work can be if it trades entirely on, you know, exploiting extreme scenarios and conjuring injustices in order to provide us with the spectacle of violence.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Philip Tallon. He has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Wild Justice: Why Do We Love Revenge Movies? And it's available exclusively for our subscribers as one of their benefits. If you're not already a subscriber to our magazine, please go to our website, equip.org, where you can subscribe and then have access to a lot of these online exclusive articles. And like I mentioned last episode, the reason why we do this is so that we can create this print magazine and bring you this content. And we do pay our writers, and we think it's important to pay them. I know that a lot of people are used to getting stuff for free on the internet. But I think that if someone does work, that we should pay them for the work that they do. And they put a lot of hours into research and then coming onto the podcast to be interviewed and getting their article ready for us. And so even though we give them a very modest honorarium, we believe that their work is worth that honorarium. So please join with us and partner with us to help us support these writers and bring you all this great content that equips you in your faith. And if a monetary way to partner with us is not in your budget, that's no problem. The best way that you can help us out is simply tell your friends about this podcast. Another way that you can help us out is to give us a review or a rating, specifically on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just give us a starred review. That's really fast. But if you have a minute and can write down a sentence about why you like this podcast, when people read those comments, it's really helpful. I know that any of us that does online shopping, whenever we read those comments about a product or a service, it helps us make a decision. Hey, I want to get that thing. Or hey, I want to listen to this podcast. So please help others know why they should be listening to this podcast. Another way that you can support our writers and this podcast and our magazine is to simply give us a tip. It's a smaller amount than a full subscription, like $3 or $5 or $10. And you can do that at our website, equip.org. And we thank you for partnering with us. You know, just talking a moment ago about how we watch these movies, and you mentioned the ethics of it. I mean, how are we to grapple with the ethics in the actual movies? Like, you know, somebody has been wronged and so therefore in Taken. So therefore, you know, he's going to go back for vengeance against his daughter. Or even you mentioned The Equalizer, which is like, he's kind of like a modern day human, almost like superhero type of person who sees, or Batman, you know, I want to say, like, he sees these bad things happening and he's going to go after the bad guys because, not because he has any attachment to the people that they are, you know, committing crimes against, but because he sees it as this universal wrong. And so somebody has to go and defend what he would say is the defenseless. And, you know, is this the kind of film, you know, that is being presented to us for entertainment that Christians should, you know, watch or even enjoy? There's also, with the extreme violence, to me, there's almost a video game element of the violence. Now, it just depends. It was quite gory in The Equalizer, the first one, the one with Denzel Washington. I'm talking about the film, not the TV series. But in the John Wick films, it's almost to the level of, you know, I could be playing a computer shooter game or something.
Yeah. So yeah, certainly the movies do feel, in a sense, video gamey, you know, done with much more, you know, art and precision. I think there's a place for the spectacle of violence within moral art. And so I think Tarantino or someone says, well, you know, just, you say you don't like violence in movies, but it's kind of like saying you just don't like tap dancing in movies, just not to your taste. I think it's a little different than that. I do think there's a sense in which, you know, when we're watching violence, it does kind of raise questions of, you know, what sort of picture of the human person is being presented here, and, you know, what are the kind of ethics involved in the situation. The movies make very clear, of course, that the people who are being harmed are very bad. In some sense, one of the problems of this contemporary trend in revenge movies is that they, not that they present kind of, they glamorize injustice, but that they present justice as being just sort of clear and obvious and easily attainable if you're good enough with a gun, right? This isn't the case absolutely, but I think in the case of The Equalizer and some degree in John Wick, but certainly in Taken, you know, forces here, the force is always justified. So the hero is almost like a kind of god figure in that he has a perfect understanding of the situation. The Equalizer, you know, is kind of always assessing what's going on. The hero is trying to do the right thing, but it's only these bad guys who are in his way. And fortunately, the hero is just much better at martial arts or, you know, fighting or shooting, and so is able to win out. And that of course is not how the world is. And so it can be profoundly misleading. And so I do think we want to be on guard for that. I don't think that, you know, it's inappropriate for people to watch the spectacle of violence on screen. I do think that the fact that something is fictional does, in a sense, change the equation from, say, watching gladiatorial games, right? Which I think we would say would be immoral to watch people actually kill each other for our entertainment. Jean-Luc Godard or someone, you know, commented, you know, and said there's too much blood in his movie. Says, oh, that's not blood, that's red. Well, I think there's a sense in which that fictive remove does change the equation. But I think we should really be on guard against the degree to which revenge is glamorized and simplified. Now, this isn't absolutely the case. There are some other movies that I think are really, you know, much more interesting to and play with, you know, themes of revenge. So there's a movie called Blue Ruin that came out a little bit ago, dealing with, you know, vengeance. There are some other, even Tarantino's, I think, Inglourious Basterds pushes the line of cruelty, of intentional cruelty, for the purpose of revenge in a way that should make the audience kind of question what's going on. And there should be some moral discomfort that we, you know, experience when we're watching that movie. Likewise, there's a movie called In the Bedroom that I think, you know, plays with revenge and sort of deals with some of its real complexities. And so that way it sort of takes us a little bit closer to reality. And I recommend, as with most things, having a kind of well-balanced diet of artistic consumption. If all we're watching or rewatching or is John Wick, I think it's going to distort our perception of reality.
So I'm sure some listeners are saying, well, you know, why would you be covering this? You know, what does the Bible have to say about justice and, you know, revenge? Is there a place for revenge? And then I know there's some, you know, listeners who are probably also struggling with certain stories in the Bible where we see in the Old Testament God saying, go out and, you know, eliminate this particular people from the land and, you know, basically go and conquer them and kill them. So how are we to do that? Especially, you know, when a lot of times Micah 6:8 is quoted about where to do, you know, act justly and love mercy and all these things. So how do we kind of square all those different things that we read about in the Bible and then come to an understanding of what is really a Christian worldview of justice and revenge?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think that the issue of God's decree of warfare is a little bit different, and that these are obviously divinely given commands. And typically when the Lord commands such things, he says, you know, these people are wicked. He gives reason for doing so. The issue very often, as we deal with it in the sort of the shift from the Old Testament to the New Testament, has to do with to what degree is, we might say, sort of justice necessary, you know, as part of our just operation in human life. So in the Old Testament, we clearly have instances where wrongs then require retribution, sort of retributive punishment, you might say, which is, and revenge is maybe, you might say, kind of a subset of retributive punishment. It's obviously retributive harm that's delivered. It could be just or unjust, but, you know, in the Old Testament, we have this prescription, you know, an eye for an eye, right? This is part of the Lex Talionis. It's in other ancient moral prescriptions as well. It's clearly a kind of an advance over a cycle of endless retaliation. And so contrary to what Gandhi says, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind, the Lex Talionis is precisely put in place to limit retribution to proportionate response. So if one person's tooth is knocked out, you get your tooth knocked out as punishment, and then it stops, right? That's the end of that sort of retribution. Now, Jesus, of course, responds to this. He says, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye, but I tell you, if someone slaps you on the cheek, turn your other as well, right? And that's Matthew 5. And so there's a sense in which Jesus is commanding us as Christians to operate by a different kind of calculus, which is that when we are harmed, we don't have to retaliate. We can instead offer grace. Now, this doesn't mean that there's no place for justice anymore, right? In some sense, what the Christian affirms is that justice has been paid, sort of compensation has been made for this wrong, but that it's, but that Jesus himself has taken punishment for wrong. And so there's a sort of a surplus of grace that we can then pay forward and provide to others, right? We ourselves are guilty and have been forgiven, and so we can extend this forgiveness. Forgiveness isn't free, right? Anybody who's ever forgiven someone for something awful knows that it is costly, even to the person who does it, right? You bear, as it were, the kind of the weight of that. But the New Testament offers a profoundly different picture of how the church should operate. Paul talks about ceding, as it were, the sword of justice to governments. He still sees a place for appropriate punishment. But in our own lives, we offer grace and restoration as a gift. We don't have to retaliate in order to sort of square the debt that injustice provokes. And so there are many senses in which, you know, kind of what we're viewing when we're viewing revenge films are profoundly unchristian, in that they're leading us to get excited about the possibility of paying back wrongs. Not to say that those, and that's the problem with these revenge films in a way, and what's maybe helpful about them is that they so clearly does force need to be brought in order to help someone else who's in trouble, as in the Taken movies, that, you know, it's obvious that in this case that this is the right thing for Liam Neeson to do. In reality, of course, that's rarely the case.
So it's interesting, the movies that we've been talking about are largely focused on, you know, men being the heroes in these revenge films, you know, male violence in terms of fighting, you know, and killing other men. And I'm just wondering if, you know, revenge is much broader than violence, because I've been, you know, every year although not because of the pandemic, not this year, I usually go to theaters and see all the buzzed about movies that are going to be nominated. And one of those very buzzed about movies is a film called Promising Young Woman, and it's getting Oscar buzz for the performance by actress Carey Mulligan. And in this film, she plays this, you know, coffee shop worker by day, but she's got like this double life, and she's on this mission to avenge her best friend who was raped. And so at night she goes to bars and she pretends to be drunk and then goes home with these supposedly nice guys who are going to, you know, take advantage of her and extracts vengeance on them. So it's interesting to me when I was watching The Equalizer and Taken that here are these guys defending women in those same situations in terms of sexual exploitation. But then in this film, a woman is taking vengeance, not a man, against wrongs done to another woman.
Yeah, and the kind of the opposing wicked force in a number of these movies is the kind of the entitlement and the, you know, power that men have culturally. So, yeah, there's a legacy of these, what you might almost call like social revenge movies, where, so 9 to 5 is a movie from the 80s, or First Wives Club, which is not a very good movie. I did watch it in preparation for this article, or Promising Young Woman, where you have women who've been wronged by men and then are, you know, getting even as a result. Promising Young Woman is a very interesting movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but it's interesting that you have this woman who's really kind of addressing, you know, a problem of things like sexual assault and the ways that it's covered up. And so she's, you know, trapping men and making them, you know, feel the pain of their, you know, sort of wickedness. And you see how men respond, which they respond with sort of indignity and entitlement. And that movie actually, you know, really falls into the sort of revenge movies. I won't spoil it because it's just out, but it really pushes, you know, on this problem of the ways that women are treated unjustly by men. And then the ways that their plight is not attended to, you know, by our system. I think it's, for people who are interested in this kind of movie, I think it's at least worth checking out. So you do have this thing. Of course, there are also revenge movies featuring women. So like Jennifer Garner and Peppermint, that's one example, but there are others, you know, as well, where you have kind of, obviously, Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill, where you have Uma Thurman, you know, who's shot on her wedding day while pregnant and then goes on this tear and eventually reunites with her daughter. So it's not exclusively a male. Whenever men are involved, doesn't necessarily mean that that's just it's going to be violent. When women are involved, doesn't mean that it's necessarily just going to be social revenge. But you do sort of see these different trends playing out. I mean, I do think that in many senses, the kind of the, our increasing interest in personal revenge does point to the sort of de-Christianization of our culture, which I think, you know, we typically there's been a focus on, you know, justice should be carried out through the system. And it seems like increasingly now we have this, you know, sort of focus on getting personal revenge, even if it's diffused in this, you know, and that is a profoundly un-Christian way to operate. And I think you see that in both the kind of male-dominated, you know, violent movies, as well as these sort of female-driven forms of social revenge movies.
So are there any commendable revenge films? I'm just wondering specifically ones that aren't rated R. They're all so extremely violent that you can recommend to our listeners. And I mean, do you even think that Christians should consider watching any revenge films?
Well, I watched a few movies. So one movie that I watched that I think has a more kind of wholesome message is Mean Girls. It's a 2000s comedy written by Tina Fey. It's based on a kind of book analyzing the social lives of teenage girls from a book called Queen Bees and Wannabes. And it, you know, deals with kind of unpopular people versus popular people in the ways that the unpopular girls are getting revenge for the cruelties of the popular girls. And it goes a little bit beyond just dealing with the satisfactions of revenge into kind of how do you then kind of like restore a community sort of in the wake of these grievances coming out. And I think that's worth viewing. I think it has some commendable qualities. A movie that is rated R, but I think is worth viewing, is a movie I mentioned earlier called In the Bedroom. And In the Bedroom is the directorial debut of Todd Field. It came out in the early 2000s. It's really a beautifully made movie, and it deals with a very comprehensible real life situation that someone might find themselves in. In the movie, you have Tom Wilkinson, who's the main character, and he's got a wife played by Sissy Spacek, and then a son who's dating this divorced woman. And the divorced woman's ex-husband eventually comes back on the scene and kills the son. So they're dealing now with the grieving for the loss of their son. The ex-husband has some kind of has a wealthy established family in town. He's made bail, and so he's out on the street, and the family is dealing with having to see their son's murderer free and the taste the possibility of living in the same town with this person for the rest of their lives. If he, for instance, got off or had some excuse for some way of getting free or gets out of jail eventually. And so the father decides to take it on himself to kill his son's murderer, right? To take justice into his own hands, to enact retributive harm on him. And so sort of third act, a lot of it, you know, follows this plan that they're enacting. Earlier in the movie, you see the father gets an injury on his finger from a lobster trap, and he's worn a Band-Aid the whole time, and it's the, you know, Band-Aid that's on his trigger finger, and they eventually carry out their plan. They kill this man, bury his body, hide it, turn home, cover up the evidence, and as the father gets into bed with his wife, she asks basically if it's done, and he lays there, obviously sort of haunted by the reality of what he's carried out, this act of vengeance. And you see him take the Band-Aid off his finger, and he sees that the wound that he had gotten earlier, and again, it's the wound on his trigger finger, is now healed, or it's getting toward healing. And there's a ambiguity in the ending, which is it the act of retribution that's helped heal the wound, or is healing something that would have taken place anyway, like this wound on his finger, and he's kind of gotten ahead of himself and done this terrible thing that's going to haunt him when in fact there is the possibility of moving beyond this horrible act of injustice that happened to him. And now he's in a sense implicated himself in this process. So I think it's a nuanced and interesting film that it really raises questions that Christians can meaningfully engage with and think through, kind of how would you respond if you're in the situation? It's it's realistic, both in that it deals with the complexity surrounding revenge, maybe some of these other movies don't, and then also deals with the kind of the muddiness of the entire process of revenge, and perhaps suggests why one shouldn't seek it out.
Well, finally, on a much lighter note, I have some fun rapid-fire questions for Phil. So, Phil, it's been uncharacteristically cold in your neck of the woods, and actually even snowing. So, rain or snow?
Oh, snow is way better. That's, you know, it's more fun to go play in. Now, it wasn't fun when our power was out for, you know, 12 hours at a time, and we were all worried about our pipes freezing and there was no water, but we did have a good time the first day, you know, sledding and running around and throwing snowballs, and it was a blast.
And since it's been so cold, sweaters or sweatshirts?
I have to dress up most days, so I typically wear sweaters.
At the grocery store, paper, plastic, or reusable grocery bags?
Well, we do try and use, you know, bring our grocery bags in, and so we don't create waste, though I always ask for paper bags because I typically have more use for them. I can, you know, cut up a paper bag and, you know, wrap a present in it, or I can sort of reuse it for something else. And so I'm a big fan of paper.
And at the grocery store, are you self-checkout or regular checkout with a cashier?
My grocery store in Sharpstown here, basically a budding Chinatown, does not have self-checkout. So it's you're always talking to a cashier. It's great.
Well, thanks, Phil, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. We want to thank our guest today, Dr. Philip Tallon. He has written an online exclusive feature article for our journal. It is called Wild Justice, Why Do We Love Revenge Movies? And you can read his article if you are a subscriber to our magazine at our website, equip.org, where you can also go to subscribe to the magazine. Thank you for listening. We'd like to connect to you, so please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man YouTube channel and join in the conversation in the comment section and in the live chat when we have premiere videos. Please follow the Bible Answer Man page on Facebook and on Twitter. You will find us at Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, Christian Research Institute, and Christian Research Journal, as well as on Instagram at the Bible Answer Man account. You won't want to miss every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern when we live stream the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff at our website, equip.org. In addition, please subscribe to the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank gets out of the studio and into his study and engages in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. You'll want to head on over to equip.org because there you're going to find thousands of free resources for you in articles and past broadcasts, our podcasts, and videos. And thank you for all the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute.